Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 166 for October 27th, 2008. Toxic Tea Party. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And by GoToMyPC, wherever you go, access your PC and all your files, programs, and email remotely with GoToMyPC. For a free trial of this award-winning service, visit GoToMyPC.com/twit. And by listeners like you. Thanks so much for your contribution. We couldn't do TWiT without it. It's time for TWiT, episode 166, the show in which we talk about the latest tech news and a great roundtable today. We welcome first Jason Calacanis, who is a regular on the show, and always glad to have you on, Jason. And this week you were very much in the news. We're going to talk about your Mahalo layoff story, if you don't mind, unless you want to leave that off the table.
I'm more than willing to be transparent about it and talk about it, and hopefully people can learn from some of the lessons.
Well, and you have been. And one of the reasons I wanted to get you on is I read your email and learned, as a budding entrepreneur, learned an awful lot. I thought it was really, really interesting. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But also, I think there's no better person to have on as we head into this kind of tech crisis, this cash crunch, something that might even be worse than the last dot boom bust.
Much worse.
Yeah. That we get somebody like Jason, who's been through it and knows a thing or two about business, on the show. Also with us, I'm really pleased to have him back. He's not on nearly enough. From Channel Flip, it's Will Harris. Hello, Will.
Hello. How are you? Greetings from
Great Britain.
Waterme, Oxford. You guys say fall, right?
Fall, but it's autumn. It can be both, right? You don't say fall?
No. Anytime I say fall, like my friends slap me around the head and call me a stupid Yank.
That's a Yank term. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it'd be good to get somebody from the international crowd on, because it's turning out not to be a U.S.-only bust. But it's
a communist perspective on the credit crisis.
Let's get the communists in. Also, I'm really pleased to welcome my good friend and a longtime collaborator, Sarah Lane, is also here.
Hello!
Yay, Sarah!
Yay!
From Revision 3, she's director of programming and community there, but also host of Pop Siren, and of course a longtime host of the Screensavers and Attack of the Show. So nice to see you.
I can't believe it took this long.
Never been on TWiT. That's weird.
It is weird. I think we talked about it, and then, you're a busy man.
I'm busy. Always busy.
He's the busy man.
So we have lots of stories to talk about, kind of an infinite number. One of the ones that kind of grabbed my eye, and it's not exactly a tech story, but it's kind of a shocker, is that the New York Times is in far worse shape than we ever imagined. It's, according to some, about to go out of business.
Well, it's the advertising.
The online advertising's disappeared. The New York Times, while it does have some successful online properties, including About.com, wasn't it just a couple of years ago, maybe last year, that the publisher said, we'll be out of the paper business in 10 years. And we all kind of poo-pooed that when that happened. But apparently the New York Times is in dire straits. Jason, is this kind of part of the general decline, or is this something that would have happened anyway?
This is a double sort of whammy. You have the general decline in newspapers and their cost structure not being part of sort of the new news process. Basically they spend too much money, and then combine that with what's happened in the markets and the amount of debt they have and their ability to pay back that debt is very much out of sync. So they're going to have to sell they've been trying to sell About.com, from what I understand.
But isn't that one of their few profitable enterprises?
The problem with it is it hasn't changed in, 6 or 7 years. And all the New York Times has done since they've got it is really destroy it.
Right. I don't go there anymore. I'd go to Mahalo over About. You're kind of the same
model.
They're
not investing. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that because we're quasi-competitors, but because
they
really haven't invested in it. And what they're doing is they're putting more and more ads on it. So when you go to the page, it's very hard to tell what's an offer, what's an ad. And that's when you know something's wrong with a site,
right?
When you when you try to squeeze as much revenue out of it as you can, you corrupt the user experience. You corrupt the user experience. The users go away, which is how Google has been able to take such incredible market share. They actually show less ads on Google, and they traditionally have been showing less, and they call that the investment in the user experience. So if you go do 10 searches, you may only see ads on 3 or 4.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yes, I know this specifically. So then what that does is when they have a down market come in, they can actually increase the number of ads. So they have a dial inside of Google, from what I've been told by people, where they can pick how much money they want to make.
And I want that dial.
Exactly, because they can just say, oh, put more ads on. So they've been conservative, so in a dark period like this, they can actually ramp it up.
Right.
The really sinister part of it, or genius part of it, or whatever, is they will show more ads on, say, a partner site like AOL uses Google search, so they'll show more ads there while showing less on their own, which over time convinces people don't use AOL search, use Google's.
Is this a problem, though, limited to the New York Times, or are all newspapers about to go out of business?
All of them are going to have fundamental problems because you have too high a cost basis. People don't look to them first for their news, right? They have a speed problem. They have a product. They have a product problem. And then they have a business model problem. And then you have an economic problem at the same time. So the business problem is they don't have any. They're competing with Craigslist, right? Which is free essentially. So Craigslist has taken a large revenue share, a large revenue stream, and basically decimated it by making it free. And then you have blogs and shows like this and Engadget and, you know, political blogs basically taking away their readership.
But it's the journal of record still. I mean, it is the paper, the one paper in the U.S. that is kind of the...
You figure if all other papers were to go away, you'd still have the New York Times.
You'd have to. I mean, that's
the place. Not going to go around. It's not going to go away. I mean, they just may have to sell things. They may have to do fundraising. So when all this stuff happens, that's when smart people are able to buy things. So... You know, you saw the Wall Street Journal get bought by Murdoch. Don't be surprised. I mean, he wouldn't be able to buy the New York Times, I don't think, because of ownership rules.
Right.
Because then he would own the Post, the New York Times, and the Wall Street Journal.
All three New York newspapers. Kind of not good. Not good. We are in a tech bust. There's no question about it. In fact, if you go to TechCrunch, they have a layoff tracker. And according to their layoff tracker, 19,683 jobs eliminated since mid-September. That's not including the 25,000 HP is going to lay off as a result of its merger with EDS. It is including 3,000 at Xerox, 9,000 at Dell, 1,500 at Yahoo, 1,500 at eBay, 6 at Mahalo. makes you sound pretty good. But as a percentage, it's roughly that you laid off about 10% at Mahalo.
Yeah, essentially, you know, we looked at it and said we have 3 years worth of capital left. Like we did something really smart. We raised a lot of money in the up market. And so as I always say, you know, what smart entrepreneurs do in an up market is raise capital and sell their companies for the highest valuation possible, right? And then in a down market, what smart entrepreneurs do is build value. And so we raised money when the market was very hot a year and a half ago. And now we're going to build value in the down market and not look for an exit or not look to raise more capital.
So your cash position, it gives you what you call runway.
They call it runway. You know, how many months can you go without raising capital? A typical startup company has 6 to 18 months. We had 3 months of capital left. We then did a reorganization / layoffs. Looks more like a reorganization, but...
with the intent of getting more... How much now runway do you have?
Now we have four years of runway.
You went from 3 months to 4 years?
No. 3 years to 4 years.
3 years to 4 years. Okay.
Yeah,
are you anticipating that this down market's going to last 4 years?
I think the down market is going to last 18 to 36 months, and... I would like to have a year or two of runway coming out of it, or the ability to buy companies during the down market.
Ah, this is a good time to snag some deals.
Exactly. So I've been looking at things. We're not in the blog business, but we own Hackaday because we had previously owned it at Weblogs Inc.
And you didn't sell it.
I didn't sell it to AOL because they wanted to shut down all the blog posts about hacking Time Warner cable boxes, which is quite reasonable.
Considering Time Warner is an AOL company. Yeah.
Right. So we didn't sell to them. So Mahalo actually owns Hackaday, you know, and Hackaday breaks even. It, you know, pays for the people who write for it. But if there were other blogs that we could buy, I would consider it, or other sites that are search related, because a lot of the search companies don't know how to build a brand. And we've actually, that's one of the things we've done pretty well, you know,
Is it impossible to get more money nowadays, or is all that venture money that's gone?
The venture money is still there. What's going to happen is venture capitalists are starting to circle the wagons, and so what they're doing is they're looking back in their portfolio and saying, which one of these companies are going to survive? I have to allocate all the money I have left to my companies, my children, as opposed to maybe adopting more kids, which would be the metaphor would be to invest in other people. So all the VCs are calling each other right now saying, hey, will you invest in my B round for this company or the C round for this company? And people are like, well, I don't really know if that's going to make it. So, you know,
I would say the flip side of that is it really depends on the kind of money that you're looking for, because if you're the sort of person that wants to do a tech company and is looking for, you know, say less than $1 million to get started, there are still a lot of opportunities to raise that kind of money out there at the moment, because there are a lot of, you know, sort of high net worth individuals who are still want to invest.
Angel
to
funding.
They ain't going to put it on the stock market right now.
Yeah, I would imagine there's a lot of people sitting on cash looking
and
for something.
So the prospect of investing in an internet business that's, you know, probably kind of risky, but no more risky than putting it in the stock market right now and potentially with huge returns is quite attractive to a lot of people in the sort of $1 million range.
What's it look like in the UK right now, Will? Are you seeing the same kind of people hunkering down, getting ready for the nuclear winter?
Well, a little bit, but not quite to the same degree. I think what's driven it all in the States has been this huge problem with the housing markets. And we haven't had that to quite the same extent in the UK. We've had, you know, the sort of dodgy loans and banks being bailed out and things, but not the same amount, really. So things are comparatively better. There's not really... the feeling over here at the moment is that there's lots of sort of hype about it, and lots of people sort of saying, "Oh, my, you know, Christmas is cancelled," and all these kind of things.
We don't know.
But then
yet.
When you actually look at it, people are sort of thinking, "Well, actually, my life hasn't got that much worse. My groceries went up a little bit, but now the cost of petrol's coming down. So the price of petrol here is now like the lowest it's been for 6 months.
Same here. It's dropping. Well, the cost of oil went.
How much is it there?
It's 94 pence a litre.
Well, 94 pence a liter. That's about the same as here. It's about $3 a gallon.
How many liters to...
Oh, don't get me doing math.
Oh, metrics.
Sarah, you're in San Francisco. You're part of the San Francisco...
Elite
Web 2.0 crowd. Is it gloomy in the city?
Yeah. Well, okay. It definitely depends on where you work. But yeah, I mean, people are worried. People are really worried.
There are layoffs here and there. Seismic laid off a few people. I mean, these smaller companies, but they're still laying off.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like, you know, we're all reading the same ValueWag articles. I mean, everyone knows what's going on, you know, as it's happening. And the startup world is definitely shaking in its boots. You know, I've not having been to New York in a while, I can't really speak for anything but San Francisco, but I can imagine that, you know, people are worried everywhere.
Jason, why do you say this is worse than the dot boom bust?
Very simple. If you look at the last bubble, it was based upon companies having too much money and spending it too freely. So their balance sheets were out of whack. They were spending more than they were making. They got over aggressive. So you had a large amount of investment in dot-coms, and they were doing things like buying Super Bowl commercials and renting huge offices and hiring 1,000 people with no chance of catching up to that amount of burn, that amount of capital being spent. This time, it's not the companies that have bad balance sheets.
We didn't have all these IPOs this time around. I thought that was going to protect us.
It does. That's why you're not seeing a bunch of companies laying off more people. That's why you're not seeing a bunch of companies explode.
It could be worse.
Much worse. Absolutely. Well, I mean, listen, it's not like, you know, Revision 3. What do they have? What do you have, 15 people there? 20 people maybe full-time?
30. Yeah.
So, I mean, 30 is actually kind of high for that size company, but it's not like it's like 100. If this had been the dot-com era, it would be pseudo.com, which had 100 people.
Let's use Twitter as an example. I mean, here's the poster child for Web 2.0. No revenue model, none in sight, lots of employees.
Doesn't matter. They have 3 years of capital.
You know what I was sort of surprised about is iMeme. I mean, laid off a few people, not that many, but it's, you know, they had 80 employees.
What do they do?
iMeme. I mean, I like iMeme. I think they do good stuff.
I don't even know what they do.
I mean, they have more than twice as much music.
Music community, iMeme. But they're killing it. I mean, iMeme has...
they're everywhere. That's for sure.
They have a huge number of people coming to that site. I mean, I'm trying to remember what their uniques are. I'm looking it up on Quantcast right now, but it's a lot. But anyway,
is that enough? If you have a lot of uniques, if Twitter's got 3 million in its community, is that enough to survive? In other words, would the people who invested in Twitter or Revision 3 or MyMeme, would they let it die? I guess at this point,
Twitter absolutely not. There's just too many users using it. And there's too much value there, and it's still growing. So no, I mean it's not in any trouble. But you asked what was the fundamental difference. So last time it was companies had bad balance sheets. This time it's individuals have bad balance sheets,
right.
And individuals, are 2/3 of the spending in this country. That's what drives our spending in this country is consumers. Consumers got way ahead of themselves. A lot of them own homes that are underwater. Their mortgage is greater than the cost of the home now. They can't sell it. They're losing jobs. All that kind of stuff. So it will take a company maybe. 6 months, 12 months, 18 months to get their balance sheet in order. An individual who has got $1 million owed on their house and they can only, sell it for $600,000 or something, those people have no hope of ever balancing their, balancing their checkbook, balancing their debt, which means you're going to see a lot of people go bankrupt. And consumers are really scared. So there's this group belt tightening effect that occurs. So people read ValueWag or the Wall Street Journal or TechCrunch. They see all the cuts. They know friends who have cut. And so I'm sure everybody on this phone call has put off buying something, not because they don't have the money, because they wouldn't feel right doing it. And that emotional state is occurring across the entire economy with even very affluent people who are just like, it doesn't feel right to buy a new car.
No, you're exactly right.
To buy a new laptop.
You're exactly right. One of the things we were talking about earlier today is I'd like to have a Twit. We'll take the Twit house, the Twit cottage, and do one of those big Christmas displays where the thing goes in sync to the music and it can have the Twit album art and stuff. It cost about $5,000 to do it. And it's not that we didn't have the $5,000, but I thought I couldn't do it. It's ostentatious. It's like thumbing your nose at people.
Exactly. So, when this tightening effect is going to occur where three less people are working at, a retailer or,
what will
Apple.
Be the bellwether? Will it be a bad sales Christmas? Will Black Friday?
Fourth quarter is a disaster. I know
already
because I know a lot of people who actually make merchandise and then sell it. What happens is there when you are a manufacturer, let's say you make diaper bags or something like that for Target, a tea set for Target, you actually have to get a letter of credit from your bank,
right,
to float that expense to send it to Target. Target can't move your stuff. The bank's not giving you a letter of credit. So there's actually tons of product that are just stuck, like stuck in China, stuck in factories, stuck in storage spaces where they're not going to make it to even retail. And then what happens is you'll see retailers go out of business this fourth quarter. When the retailers go out of business, they flood the market with inventory. So then, Hank and Barry's or whatever that one is, the sports store, they went bankrupt. A bunch of people have gone bankrupt. Then all that product goes on the market and it makes it really difficult for the strong retailers to compete because there's all this stuff flooded on the market. Combine that with people not wanting to spend because they feel guilty or they don't have the money. And it just becomes this ripple effect, and it's already started, and it's going to continue into next year, and it's going to be a major disaster. The stock market is going to take a major hit in the fourth quarter,
So get out of the stock market. Is that your advice?
I think the stock market, the Dow, will trade at 85. I said the bottom of the Dow was 8,500.
Well, we're there.
Plus or minus 10%. My belief is the Dow and NASDAQ. No, 10% is a pretty good swing. So that means, 7,700 up to 9,500. It will be in that range for the next 2 years, is my belief.
I'm hearing a lot of people saying you're not going to see a sudden resurgence. It's going to stay at this whatever bottom is at this level for a while.
But also, just to say, what you were pointing out, Leo, which is that as much as anything, this is partly a kind of group think effect,
group think. Yeah.
Where, a lot of people have still got the money. A lot of people have not been hit as hard as other people. You know, you've got your money to do your Christmas display, but people, but for whatever reason, whether it's fear of being ostentatious or, you know, just sort of adhering to mentality, it's
or thinking I may not get my money, I may not get that a chance at that money ever again, and better hold on to it just in case.
So it's in some ways it's not as, although it is as bad, it's not as bad as it could be, I suppose.
Microsoft's quarterly results offer hope to tech sector. A rare glimmer of hope to Wall Street this week. Microsoft's net profits, $4.37 billion for the 3 months ending September 30th. That's compared to $4.29 the year before. Revenue, $15.06 billion, 9% up. And yet, people are saying still bad news. Microsoft's forecasts are poor. Apple had a great quarter. Apple said sales of the iPhone, 6.9 million. They made a ton of money. Net profit of £683. I'll do that for you, Will. Things are going good, and yet both companies have are saying, but don't count on this lasting.
So I think it's interesting to note that, you know, the headline number for Microsoft is that quarter one was up 10%.
Right.
10% in its revenue in quarter one, despite, you know, Vista, the sort of so-called...
So it's a good quarter. So why did Apple stock tank when that news came out?
Well, I mean, if you look at the price earnings ratios of these companies, they're still in the 12 to 15 range.
They're too high.
And during a brutal depression, you know, prolonged recession, they go down to like 8 or 9 from what I understand. And that would be like the historic buying opportunities. And, you know, they've been trading at 20.
GE is at 8 right now.
Yeah. So, but that's because we don't know how much their earnings will take a hit. So that 8 sounds really low unless their earnings are coming off, are going to fall off a cliff. And if that's the case, then the earnings could continue to drop. They can continue to make cuts and it doesn't move anywhere. So that shows you how pessimistic people are. And in down markets, great companies build market share. So in some ways, Apple and Microsoft will be fine. They're both going to, you know, take market share. The bottom for me, when you see Google do layoffs.
Yeah, Google's just kind of sailing along.
Google has never had a layoff.
Ever.
Right. And in order to make their number this quarter, supposedly they cut like $250 million in capital expenditures.
Did they turn that dial?
Well, you know, nobody knows
money.
About...
We need money.
Yeah, nobody knows about the secret dial. But the fact that they cut... The way they hit their earnings numbers from what I've read is by cutting costs. So when you see companies that are great companies cutting costs in order to make their number as opposed to it being, you know, growth, et cetera... That's when you know there's a slowdown coming. So when Apple and Google start laying people off or curtail hiring, which they've already announced they're going to do,
right.
That's when you know things are going
to... That's their way of saying...
That's my way of finding the bottom. I think the bottom is when Google lays people off.
So watch for that. And now the New York Times parsed Microsoft's quarterly profits announcement and said, here's the problem. The Windows unit reported only a 2% rise in revenue and a 4% decline in operating income.
Which still means a lot of revenue.
Well, yeah.
I mean, for
in the billions, right. With a B.
Yeah.
But what they're saying, and I think this might be true, is that the problem is that Vista take-up is not very good and that people are moving to the less expensive netbooks, which often don't run Vista, usually run XP or Linux, worse for Microsoft. So these sub-$500 netbooks are becoming more and more popular, about a quarter now of the PC.
Although it's worth noting that the one of the best performing divisions in Microsoft that quarter was the entertainment and devices.
The historically unprofitable Xbox 360 right. And Zune market.
And so the Xbox 360 didn't really change much from last year. But the quote that I'm reading is that the numbers were buoyed by sales of software for the Mac and Zune and mobile. Can you believe it? So the entertainment and devices went up 51%. 51% based primarily on Mac and Zune.
Yeah, but 51% of a buck is only still a buck 51.
Well, it's 216 million.
All right.
So it's not quite the billions, but all
right.
Right.
Well, I don't want everybody listening to this show to get depressed.
So I'm depressed.
I know. It's kind of sad.
Well, there's actually a lot of silver linings to it. I mean, I'm actually writing an email about this that I haven't finished yet, but maybe I'll finish it after the show today. Which is basically like, this is when value is created. You know, my first company, Silicon Hour Reporter, I started in 96 and built in 96, 97, 98. Weblogs, Inc., Gawker, Twitter, Delicious, StumbleUpon, Flickr. Those were all, you know, 2003, 2004 kind of companies. Again, the down market. So, you know, you can, one of the great moments of creativity comes when people are unemployed and, you know, they're not looking to get paid. They're looking to, or get rich. They're looking to just do something interesting. And I think that's what we're entering the third golden age of technology, you know, in terms of the internet. The first was in 96, 95, 96, 97, when people just did it for the fun of it. 2002, 2003, 2004, when blogs and social media, Web 2.0 was built again for the fun of it, just because people were looking for interesting things to do.
Well, that's
we're
kind of what
that again.
That's kind of what I've been saying is that, yeah, okay, times are tough, but this doesn't mean that innovators, the kids getting out of MIT and Stanford, just say, oh, forget it, I'm going to go work at Burger King. They continue to innovate. They just go into a garage and they invent stuff. And, you know, people gave McCain a really hard time for saying the fundamentals of the economy are strong. But to be honest, the thing that makes this country successful is that innovation, that spirit, that doesn't go away in tough times.
No, actually, and it actually increases because people have more free time. I mean, if you look at what happened just in your own world when Tech TV imploded, that's when Kevin Rose started doing Dig, right?
Yeah.
And built it for $6,000.
What happened?
Peter Rojas, you know, I think got laid off from Red Herring, or Red Herring imploded. That's when he started Gizmodo and then came to work with us on Engadget. You know, what happens when really talented people have nothing to do is they build something really interesting. And so if it wasn't for the down market the last time, I don't think Weblogs, Inc. or Delicious, Josh Schechter's company, StumbleUpon.
Isn't that interesting?
Those things wouldn't have been built because those people would have been busy working for the man.
Dig wouldn't have happened, right, Sarah? I mean, Kevin invented Dig while he was at Tech TV, but he would never have had the time to throw into it.
He was at G4, I believe.
He was, I think it was still San Francisco, but then he was at G4. Well, you would know better than
I. He was in L.A. at G4.
He was L.A.
Sarah would be the definitive expert on this, I think.
I remember the conversation. I know. Exactly.
So he was in L.A. when he had the idea for Dig?
But it was, yeah. But it was this.
And he quit shortly after. I remember he was on the show. He said, I'm going to leave.
I mean, there was definitely some overlap when he was trying to figure out if it was the right thing to do.
And had he not left, he would never have had time to make it.
Oh, never.
Happen.
He had to leave.
Right.
I mean, he wanted to anyway,
right.
But he would have had to make a choice.
Right.
And obviously, it was really, really the right one.
In retrospect,
I guess. I
good
don't know.
Choice.
Who goes to Dig?
I tried to buy it from him. I took him to lunch in Santa Monica and had sushi.
Did
and
you?
I was like, yeah. That's the sort of backstory to the whole thing was, you know, I realized it was sending like 1,000 people to Engadget every time somebody got on the homepage.
Wow.
And I was like, listen, we'll put Dig buttons on the entire Weblogs Inc. network, which was much bigger than Dig at the time. And I was like, listen, I want to buy half of it, $2 million, make it a $4 million valuation. We want to get, you know, give you 25% cash or 25%, you know, equity, whatever. I wanted to make it a Weblogs Inc. property. And he was like, well, my friend knows Mark Andreessen and he might invest. And I guess that's when he met Jay. And lucky for him, he didn't do the deal with me and he did the deal with Jay.
I don't know. So lucky. I don't know.
He would have. He definitely, if he became part of Weblogs Inc., would have made a couple of $1 million. But I think he's done much better doing his own thing.
Speaking of Inc., he's on the cover of Inc. this week.
Yeah.
Wow. First business week, and now
Have you seen the inside the magazine? It's
is he in a gatefold?
Yeah, well,
in front of a fireplace, bearskin rug.
No, it's a bunch of people chasing him down the street.
You're kidding?
No,
yeah,
I'm not.
You should see London. I was in London with him for FOA.
Yeah,
and he did a dig. You know, we both spoke at the same conference. He did a live Dig Nation, and it was packed with people. And then they had an after party, and there were so many people trying to get to him and Alex that they created like a VIP area for him where, you know, it was along these stairs and a balcony, and they couldn't let him walk through the restaurant alone because it, like Bono or Jesus Christ or something, like 100 people would collapse on him, literally.
Can you feel the jealousy emanating off of me right now?
Like Bono or Jesus Christ.
I swear to God, I want that.
It says the hottest small company in America, how Kevin Rose, founder of Dig, captured the hearts and minds of the most desirable, and I can't read the rest.
La 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 la.
Something really good.
La 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 la.
Really good. I think it's a very nice cover.
So let's talk about other crazy tech mainstream endorsements. Oprah and the Kindle.
Well, this is weird. Okay. She spends the whole show. Did you see the show, anybody?
I saw part of it.
She spends the whole show talking about the Kindle.
Well, you know, it's like, it's such a weird Oprah effect. I mean, I understand
but it's like an ad. Did they pay for that?
I don't know. I can't imagine that would have, that would be, I
it's just like Oprah it's the full show.
Oprah doesn't have.
She doesn't need the money.
No,
God knows.
I can't imagine that she
was
would
Jeff
do
Bezos
sort of
on the show or is
covert
Bezos,
sponsorship.
Bezos was on the show supposedly. Yeah.
Did he laugh? I want to hear.
I didn't see him on the clip.
You would have remembered that. So she
I can't
she
wait to see the Kindle sales.
See, this is why I think it's an ad, because she offers a $50 off coupon, right?
Well, her book club makes a tremendous amount of money. So I think if she,
That's true. It's all related, I guess.
When she stopped doing the book club, publishers all over the world broke down in tears.
She should probably do an Oprah version of the Kindle that comes with hard 10 favorite books and charge an extra $99 for it. That would be the dope move. I'm absolutely sure that will happen.
She calls it her new favorite gadget. There is a 30-second commercial on the Amazon site in which she describes it as life-changing for me and the wave of the future.
Oh, everything's life-changing for Oprah.
That is true, actually.
Isn't that like the definition of what's on Oprah, is that it has to be life-changing?
But everybody who watches Oprah, whatever she says, I mean...
It's true. I mean, whatever
Oprah
says.
Kevin Rose has an army.
Oprah's got a small leg on... Up on Kevin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She got it as a, quote, gift.
From him.
Yeah. I get a gift.
A gift?
Yeah, yeah. A gift.
Happy birthday, Oprah. Kindle.
She, you know, Charlie Rose, Martha Stewart also have talked about the Kindle and effectively endorsed it, but Oprah is the big one. So
unfortunately, it was just announced this week that the Kindle is going to be delayed until the new year in
Kindle
England.
Too?
It was supposed to come out for Christmas.
Oh, you don't have a Kindle?
England. No, you can't buy it over here.
Losers.
Otherwise, I would have one. So it was supposed to come out in time for Christmas here, but problems with the licensing for the 3G, for the cellular networks over here mean it's not going to be out till to the beginning of next year.
The New York Times posits that this makes the Kindle a mainstream gadget now. I don't think that's going to. I don't think as much as Oprah carries. And I have to admit, on my radio show, somebody called and said, I'm not an early adopter, I'm not a gadget queen, but I saw Kindle on Oprah, what do you think? But I just can't believe that that would make the difference and put Kindle over the top. I think it's going to take more than that, don't you?
This is going to have a big impact. And
really?
The product's getting better, so...
I think a lot of people who watch Oprah are going to get it home and go, huh?
I think what the Kindle needs is another spin. It needs just another go around the block, just a slightly nicer hardware design and another sort of marketing push. And I think, you know, with Oprah, it's kind of got like 3/4 of the way there to mainstream. And I think if they just respin it and do another push on it, they could really put it over the top. You know, the iPod wasn't big until the second or third revision, right?
Oh, really? Is that true? It didn't really take off right away?
No, it didn't. Yeah, it took a while.
Interesting. I didn't know. I don't remember.
I felt like it did from the very beginning.
I don't remember.
I guess in terms
we
of...
We liked it.
Very expensive. Exactly. People didn't understand it. It was when they got iTunes Store working right, that's when it really took off.
Google's founders own a fighter jet. Yay! Maybe they haven't done... Now, maybe this is a sign of the bottom. There has been a fighter jet spotted at Moffett Field. It is owned by the company that owns all of Google's other jets. This is the weird thing. It's not the first time a tech entrepreneur has owned a fighter jet.
Larry Ellison
has owned one.
Well, because I read this and I was like, a fighter jet. Now this is just getting wild. And then I read on and oh no, that's already been done before by Larry Ellison. Of course.
That's so weird. So it's one of yours, Will. It's a Dornier Alpha jet.
Okay. I'll pretend like I know what that is.
Well, you know, one of yours. It's a British thing.
Cool. At least they're buying sensibly.
I think it's British. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. It's
So what do they need a fighter jet for? Is it just for giggles?
Oh no, it's German and French. Now there's a weird combination.
Well, one of them is a pilot.
Yeah.
What happened?
Schmidt's a pilot.
Just an enthusiast.
And also,
thing
Larry Page is learning how to fly helicopters. I mean, what happens is when people make a lot of money, there's this phenomenon called toxic wealth, where they basically make enough money to kill themselves, and they have all this free time, and they start pushing the envelope. And there was a famous story about it, the guy who did Eagle Computer, which was supposed to be...
I remember it very well, yeah.
Eagle Computer was supposed to be like HP, or it was, you know... And
it was my first IBM clone. I bought a bunch of them.
Exactly, and the guy who was running it killed himself, and Dennis... Barnhart was killed in the crash of his new Ferrari, leaving the company. This is the day of the IPO.
Oh.
He bought a Ferrari and he lost control of it. Him and his, I think him and his lawyer were killed.
Oh, that's
so
awful.
That's always the anecdote they tell people who get, you know, rich
toxic
with their IPO.
Wealth. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look at John Denver. Like, this guy's flying experimental planes. It's like, you know what?
Well, that might have been another story there. I don't know.
Well, I mean, but why is he flying experimental planes?
Right.
You know, like,
I leave that
to the professional pilots.
Don't you get like this master of the universe feeling where you just you feel invulnerable and you can do anything? And then there's the other problem is you have so much money, you can't spend it fast enough.
It's a Tony Stark kind of a thing, you know, where it's like, okay, when you get to the point where every single desire or want has been taken care of, you start thinking about experiences and pushing the envelope. And there is a little bit of that master of the universe slash
invulnerable.
What next? You know, like, okay, I can own the plane. Now I need to fly it. You know, like you start literally as like a Tony Stark kind of a.
Who's Tony Stark? Is that Atlas Shrugged?
Iron Man.
I should
know. You know, it's like you have all this money and then you start doing crazy things because it's to a certain extent, it's boredom, you know.
Do you think that Larry Page will become the next superhero?
I think there's a chance he already is, actually. I think that he might be operating underground, taking out Al-Qaeda guys.
They have a fighter jet.
He looked diesel when I saw him at Foo Camp a year ago. He looked like he was working out. I mean, he is definitely hitting the gym.
If I could afford a gym in the house... A cook to make perfect meals for me, a 24/7 trainer, I could look good too.
No doubt.
Maybe not.
Yeah. But anyway, these planes are very dangerous. I know. I had a friend of mine had one.
Oh.
Yeah, and they burn a lot of jet fuel. They go really fast, and it's just like
here's somebody who isn't saying, "Oh gosh, I better not buy this." What will people think? Here's somebody
they probably bought it a long time ago, but
it's not on their radar. Well, one of the things they do have a deal. The reason they're storing it at NASA Ames, beside the fact that they lease this government property to house all their jets, is that they have a deal to do scientific missions for NASA. And that's what they say. This jet is going to be. We're going to use it. Maybe they could fix the Hubble.
It's a great. I've actually flown into that airport on a friend of mine's plane.
Really?
Yeah, I can't say who, but it's basically like the rich guy, like cool thing to do is to fly into that airport because it's right next to Kulikha.
Right.
And like it's cool enough to fly into SFO, but like you fly into SFO, you go through the private terminal, and the private terminal is like, you know, it's you see people there. But when you fly into, like, you know, the government thing, you don't see anybody, you know?
Right.
It's, like, really cool.
The men in black come to help you.
It's
so
exactly.
I watch Entourage. Is it true that in the private jet port, like, they have these really hot stewardesses?
Yes.
Oh.
Next question.
That doesn't seem right somehow.
No, that sounds about right.
they portray it exactly.
It's really what it's like?
They portray it pretty accurate. I mean, just so everybody's clear, I don't have the money to have a plane. I don't fly.
No, but you
private
have friends in high places.
But I fly on private jets a couple times a year, probably. And it's exactly like they showed on Entourage. You fly into a hangar like that.
Right.
And in the hangar, there's like two or three planes, and they're parked on angles. And like the entire crew is out there waiting for you, and you pull up in your car. You get out, and then they take your car. So it's pretty dope.
Yeah, it sounds, you know.
Would you like that kind of lifestyle?
Sure.
Pretty ridiculous. It's totally unjustifiable, but
I have too much of a New England Puritan streak. I would feel guilty. I couldn't enjoy it.
I have to replace the clutch in my Honda Civic.
Yeah.
I felt guilty for about 15 minutes
and then enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
I'm going to feel really guilty if I don't take a break and mention audible.com. Jason,
Audible.
You may start squirming. Jason gets orgasmic whenever I mention it. Audible.com is the place where you go to get your audiobooks, the best audiobooks in the world, 51,000 titles. I'm a big fan of Audible. There are two plans that we talk about. There's the gold plan. That's a book a month. But I also want to mention the Audible Platinum plan. That is for, I think it's 50, is it what is it, 15, 25? I can't remember the price. For 25 bucks a month? I pay it. I don't even know what it is. You get 2 books a month. Now, if you sign up now at audible.com/twit2, the number 2, for the Platinum plan, we're going to give you 2 free books. So you're going to have the chance to download and enjoy 2 free books if you decide not to stick around. No charge, and you get to keep the books. But I think you're going to want to. There's so many great books. What are you listening to these days, Jason? You got one to...
You know what? I just bought this book, and I got to get my iPhone because I forgot the name of it. I bought this globalization book that Fred Wilson keeps talking about it's not the world is flat, but it's like that.
Thomas Friedman does have a new book on there, I noticed.
He does, yeah. But there's this other book on globalization that I've been reading or listening to. I was listening to it playing poker the other day, and it's awesome. And I just
wait a minute. Now, you told us that you listen to music while you play poker. You also listen to books?
Yeah, I do that sometimes.
That's pretty funny. So you really don't have to pay attention. Is that on the beginning tables?
Yeah, but yeah. Then I have a trick I use when I'm in tournaments, which is I put my headphones on, I play with my phone, but I don't actually turn on the music, and I pretend like I'm totally distracted, but I'm actually paying attention, and then people start talking about...
They think you're not listening.
I don't think I'm listening.
Do you actually sing? You actually start saying... Womanizer, womanizer.
That would be good, actually. I just like nod your head.
How about the 5 temptations of a CEO? Is that it? I'm looking at the top. The business books are really good, but see, I listen to some of those. I love the history. I love the nonfiction, but I also love, you know, the fiction. They've got a great selection of sci-fi and fantasy. There's just a ton of great stuff. Let me just recommend you visit audible.com. Browse around. When you find something you want. You see, I got 2 credits right here. When you find something you want, go to audible.com/twit2. You're going to get 2 credits, 2 free credits towards books. Most books are a credit. Some of the larger books are 2 or more credits, just so you know. Like Anathem turns out to be, I think, a couple of credits. But you're just going to have a great time. The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Is there one business book that you think is just a must read, Jason?
I think Good to Great and Crossing the Chasm.
I love Good to Great, yeah.
Those two are the...
Last time you were on, you recommend Good to Rate, and I don't think it's on Audible.
It's not on there yet, no.
Which is a bummer. Let me see if... By the way, that is not Audible. That is the publisher. The publisher gets to decide, and a lot of times publishers, for some reason... How about Crossing Hoffa, A Teamster's Story? No. Black Creek Crossing, Crossing the Lines, Assignment. I don't think they have that one either. Crossing the Chasm is not on here either.
I just bought one from iTunes, and... You know, when you buy it on iTunes, some of them are Audible, and I know it's Audible because when it started, it said...
This is Audible.
This presentation is brought to you by Audible.
I want them to let me do This is Audible. I could do such a good job of that. This is Audible. Audible.com/twit2. Check it out. Really, you're going to love it. If you listen to podcasts, you will love Audible.com. We thank them so much for their support of This a Week in Tech. Let's see what else is on the agenda. There's a lot of news this week. We got into the political stuff, but we didn't mention the woman who's going to jail over murdering. Well, this is weird. I almost don't even believe this story. If the BBC hadn't published it, I wouldn't have. Yeah, but it's a woman has been arrested in Japan after she allegedly killed her
online
virtual husband.
Yeah. Well, he divorced her online. And she got mad and supposedly hacked into his computer and
killed, you know, the character.
Yeah, killed the I don't know.
The game is Maple Story, which I don't know. I guess it's probably big in Japan.
I mean, I guess it's, you know, it's a matter of that she invaded his privacy.
Well, yeah, I mean, she broke the law in the sense that she hacked him.
It's just the circumstances are, you can't help it. Laugh a little.
Well, it's the crime is unauthorized computer usage and hacking,
right,
and all those kind of
things.
Yeah,
but 5 years
in
prison.
You know, the headline is, you know, woman goes to jail for killing virtual person, which is pretty hilarious.
So, a police official, according to the Associated Press, said the woman had used the man's ID and password to log into the game last May to carry out the virtual murder. She said, "I was suddenly divorced without a word of warning. That made me so angry. I could see doing this. It's better than killing the guy."
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do they even know each other?
This exactly is news.
Do the real people know each other?
Do you think they ever met?
I don't know.
Maybe they never even met.
I mean, word to the wise. Don't kill your online... Don't divorce your online wife.
Even in the online world, divorce is a tricky...
She lives 620 miles away, 1,000 kilometers away, in southern Miyazaki. Her husband lives in Sapporo. He's a 33-year-old office worker. She's a 43-year-old... housewife.
It was never going to work.
I'm sorry, piano teacher.
Doomed from the start.
Doomed from the start. Long distance, age difference. She likes pianos. He likes piano bars. It's just not going to work.
It was just, yeah. I mean, it's she was a woman scorned who happened to play online games.
I tell you, I can understand that. I think it's a great story.
Women can be very vengeful.
Men can be vengeful too. Let's not be sexist here.
That's true.
On the subject, what is this? Apple donates $100,000 to what is Prop 8?
Oh, we'll get to that in a second. I just want to. Jerry Brace in our chat room said she autoexec dot batted his head in. little DOS humor to make sure that the geeks are still awake.
That's kind of funny.
She exec that bad his head in. So
Control-Alt deleted him.
Prop 8, this is actually a little bit controversial. Well, with some anyway. Prop 8 is a California state proposition. In California, we have this kind of weird proposition referendum thing that is not very hard to get something on the ballot. The problem is that people were upset with the state legislature for not getting anything done, so they put this mechanism in where the voters get to just throw anything up there. And everybody has to decide it. This Prop 8 is a yes vote on it, overturns California state law and adds a constitutional amendment saying it's illegal for anybody to get married if they're not a man and a woman. In other words, gay marriage. And this is confusing by itself. A yes vote says no to gay marriage. A no vote says yes to gay marriage. Mm-hmm. So that's this is you already see the problem here. So Apple, you know what? Apple is a very, you know, Steve Jobs is a liberal guy. I mean, he's a vegan. His wife,
is he a vegan?
Yeah.
How did I not know that?
Yeah. No, in fact, his wife wanted to start I don't know if she did a vegan food company.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
No, he's very hip. Apple is a very, has always had good, workplace rules for, what do they call it? Partners?
Domestic
partnership. They have great domestic partnership benefits. So they've always been promoted that. But it's
controversial. The sort of thing that you would sort of expect from this company, but at the same time, it's quite a statement.
It's very political. Google also put money into this.
It's about time, because the fact that we're even having this discussion in this day and age is just, people are going to look back 20, 30, 40 years from now and be like, how could anybody not speak up when people's fundamental rights were being taken away from them?
Civil rights.
It's just unbelievable. Like,
but as a business, it's a little risky because there are people who feel very strongly about this issue. And I'm sure they're, the Christian right is big on boycotts. I'm sure there'll be a boycott against Apple.
Yeah, but you know what? I think that at a certain point, there'll be a tipping point where it's like, okay, you have all these middle American folks who, are against gay marriage, but they have gay people in their families and they watch Ellen DeGeneres and, they like Lindsay Lohan if she's gay or not. Who knows exactly what's going on there?
Lindsay Lohan is gay?
Leo, come on.
Oh, yeah. What? She has been dating this woman, Samantha Ronson. Anyway,
God, my hopes and dreams dashed.
Yeah,
no,
what a catch.
Leo, she's probably bisexual.
Okay.
Anyway, the point is...
hope yet.
I think we've gotten
to
the point
where... That's
the
title of the show, by the way. Lindsay Lohan is gay? Let me just write
I don't
down.
Think they're actually going out on too hard of a limb here. The fundamentalists are such a small group of people, even though they're vocal. At a certain point, the smart people of the world have to speak up and go, you know what? Enough. Let people, if they want to be married, be married.
I think there's a great quote from the chat room, which is, gay people have as much right to be miserable as other married people.
I've never really understood this man as a woman thing. You know what they're doing, though, in the ads here in California? It's one of the reasons that this is actually a very close vote, believe it or not. Mm. The no on 8 people had a strong lead that's been eroded away, and the polls say now it's almost neck and neck. And one of the reasons they've run ads that are a little scurrilous, in which they say, hey, if this law passes... Or rather, if it doesn't pass, which is very confusing. I mean, half the people are going to vote wrong just because they don't understand what the...
Because they're going to say yes for
yes
marriage.
On gay marriage. No, it's a yes vote is a no on gay marriage. And anyway, the ads say, if we don't pass this, then kids as young as, kindergartners will have to be taught about gays marrying. And that scares people. I don't know why. If you had gay parents as a kindergartner, I would think that this would be a good thing.
Right.
Anyway, it is. I think it's a brave thing for both Apple and Google to do so publicly. Apple put $100,000 into it.
Yeah,
it's
good
for them. awesome. It's to be commended, and everybody else should get a line. By the way, the book I was talking about before, Leo, I hate to do an Audible ad in the middle of the show, but The Post-American World by Fareed Zakaria.
Fareed Zakaria is a Newsweek, great Newsweek author. He has a CNN show that's fantastic.
This book is amazing. I mean, he really is breaking down in the book exactly what is going on in the world. And after I just did a 3-week trip, Athens, London, Korea, man, it is, the world is changing radically.
Well, you know, I believe that. I travel a lot, and I'm making sure my kids travel a lot, because I think the world they're growing up into is a global world. And, you know, our business at Twit is 30% of our audience now is outside of the U.S. It's a very global business, and I think this is the future.
30%, huh?
Yeah, we're not talking about offshoring jobs. We're talking about the fact that it's a global economy now.
Mm-hmm. We're talking 35% of your audience is outside the U.S. You would not believe people know me as much for the companies I've done or the TechCrunch 50 as for Twit at this point. When I went to Athens, they had an open coffee. There were 250, 300 people there. I would say half the people who came up to me said, Dvorak/org.blog. When I was in London, people were like, after I was at the Dignation recording, and like as we're walking out, people were like, do Dvorak. You know, it's like, I'm like, nah, I'm not going to do it. Nah,
you know
get
what?
Out of here.
Now I know why John won't be on with you. It's that lousy impression.
Oh, that impression is spreading so much. It's incredible. In Korea, people are like, I love you on Twitter.
That's really great.
And I had the same experience in Australia. I told you about the guy who on the plane wants to take a picture with me because he knows me from Twit.
Well, and I'm not using this as a way to tout Twit, but I think it's an example of the fact that if you allow your business to be global, it absolutely will be global. And it's interesting because here we are. This is an English language broadcast in many of those countries, Korea, Greece. English is not their first language, and yet they listen.
For people under 20 years old in those countries, they all speak English now.
And they want to know about tech.
And the English language, the spreading of the English language is truly going to be amazing, because this is amazing advantage for companies in the U.S. Like Dignation probably has as many people watching it outside the U.S. as inside the U.S.
I think that's really interesting that Kevin gets that response in London. I mean, that's a very
much
good
bigger response than he would in the U.S., I think.
And I should point out, the Tech TV, well, I guess we were seen in Britain, but not by a lot of people. I mean, Tech TV was not a particularly global phenomenon, and yet a lot of the people...
I don't think we could even get Tech TV in Britain. I'm pretty sure that
didn't exist. Remember Malaysia, though.
We were huge.
We were big in Malaysia.
And there was a club in Abu Dhabi.
I don't remember that.
There was a little Tech TV club.
Aw, really?
Yeah, isn't that cute? Yeah, they would gather and they would watch the show.
Philippines. Yeah. I remember we used to get a lot
We're big in the Philippines, Net24 broadcast.
Mm-hmm. It's a huge business opportunity for Twit, I mean, and for Dignation. They had Virgin sponsored, and they did two shows over there.
Right.
It's going to translate into dollars and cents.
Well, what's interesting is advertising is not yet global. It's very much, at best, national, usually regional, sometimes local. And so it's very hard for us to sell ads based on our international numbers. We actually cut our numbers by 25% when we sell our ads, because
it's going to change really quick.
It should. I mean, Audible's everywhere. Dell was everywhere. Visa's everywhere. So they also get benefit, but they don't, you know, the agency is only an American agency. So they're,
what's going to happen is there is actually Google AdSense is operating now in these countries. Yeah. Overture has been operating for a while.
Yeah.
And there are ad buyers. So I remember at Weblogs Inc., we started getting people emailing us saying, can we buy your Canadian traffic from you for $5 CPM and we'll resell it for, you know, $25 or whatever. So we started doing that. And I basically would put out a standing offer. I'd tell people, you know, give me $5 for each unit and you can do whatever you want with it as long as it's, you know, within, you know, tasteful means. And that's going to happen. People will come to you and say, can people download the show or auto insert the ads? That technology is all being built right now.
Yeah. Unfortunately, our ads are really based around this kind of live read that we do. And that may not translate well to that kind of thing. But I don't care. I'm happy doing what I'm doing.
You'll have a licensee, so that would be the way to do it.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, that's what we do with a radio show. We license it to internationally, and we take the ads out, but they put their own ads in, so they pay a cash outlay for that.
you should do is you should go to the BBC or the Guardian or, you know, the Times of London or any of those people and just say, would you like to syndicate the show? They'll put it on their website with their ads and just charge them a fee.
Yeah.
It'll work. I guarantee it. And it's going to be easier and easier to do as the infrastructure is built out.
I've got, you know, I think for the British ads, I actually can do, I think I have a, I just are putting these bad teeth. And I say, oh, no.
What? No.
Hello, matey. I'd like to sell you some candy.
Oh.
I think that'd go well, wouldn't it, Will?
Hello, I'm Gordon Ramsay for Twit This Week in Tech.
Oh, they're so
Don't
awful.
Be a donkey.
Don't You're be a donkey. Donkey. Boy. What's a product I could sell?
I'm literally crying right now.
Smarties are like M&M's, but for smart people.
They're great. Eat more, please. We love them everywhere.
God love you.
What's scary, Leo, is with those teeth and how much you look like a number of people I know.
Yeah, well, it's a British thing, you know. We don't go to the dentist.
It's so bad being next to you. It transforms your entire face.
It's awful, isn't it?
It's really...
My kids hate it when I put those in.
I don't know why you ever would.
That we have free dental care.
Halloween is coming. You know, I think that's isn't that a calumny against the Brits? You all have good teeth now. Although, you don't have the same fetish that we have in the States for orthodontia.
Only in children.
Oh, okay.
There's a great amount of pediatric orthodonty, if that's a word, orthodontricism, which is how you get, you know, in all the tragic British books of sort of not tragic comedies, sort of Dickensian. You know, all the kids grow up with these huge braces on their faces, and this is what twists them.
Welcome to America. Let's take a break. I want to talk about the new G1, Google's first phone. It's out on the T-Mobile network. I'm holding one right here in my little hand, and I don't know if any of you have them, but we'll talk about that in just a second. Before we do, though, I want to mention our good friends at GoToMyPC. This is a product I've been using for a long time. If you travel, GoToMyPC is a lifesaver. GoToMyPC allows you to access your office computer from anywhere you can get online, whether it's an internet cafe, a hotel, the airport. You know, frankly, you can go home early or even spend one day less at the office and work from home. The boss will never know you're gone. It's just like you're there. You go to gotomypc.com. There's your office computer, full screen. You can run any program, send and receive email. You can access any network resource. That's my Google phone making noise. You can copy stuff over. Isn't that a cute sound?
Yeah, it's a good one.
You can do all of that just as if you're there in real time. And by the way, 128-bit SSL encryption. So it's like a VPN. So if you're at an insecure place, and every hotel internet, very dangerous, or internet cafe is very dangerous, not if you're using GoToMyPC. You're encrypted from that place, whether it's a Mac or a PC, whatever you're using to get online, all the way to your office computer. So the security is fantastic. I want you to try GoToMyPC free right now, 30 days, absolutely free. Just go to GoToMyPC. Yeah, free.
Free.
I don't know how they make money, but that's, you know, that's their problem.
Free
not mine.
For 30 days. So you try it, you get nothing to lose.
They know you're going to get hooked. That's why.
And in this, you know, economic times, you got sales calls, et cetera. You cut half the sales calls. You do a GoToMyPC. It's going to be just as effective, and you're probably going to get the sale. And what's not to love?
I just want to let you know that you don't have to do the ads with me, Jason.
We're in a recession. This is something where everybody could look at their budgets for the startup. They could think about the sales calls. You cut half the sales calls. You know, you're doing 4 or 5 a month.
That's really true.
You know, 10 grand a month is 100.
Now, don't confuse this with GoToMeeting, another of their products where you could do the sales meetings. That's really cool.
Yeah, this is GoToMyPC, right?
Yeah, this allows you to access your office computer. Same technology. Citrix, really, these are the guys. I remember Ed Iacobucci.
People use it for customer support, too, or training.
Oh, yes. I use it with my mom.
Right, so that's what I'm talking about. You could go and take over somebody's PC, train them how to use the software, or walk.
Oh no, it's great for that. And because, you know, mom's not going to get through the firewall and the security I put on, but she doesn't have to. GoToMyPC completely securely configures itself to go through them. They use basically a triangle method so that you're outbound on both edges. You geeks know what I mean. It is an absolutely secure, safe, and easy way. I want you to use it free. GoToMyPC.com/twit. That's all you have to know. GoToMyPC.com/twit. 30 days absolutely free. Did you get a Google phone yet, Jason?
I don't have one, but I was playing with it yesterday, actually.
What do you think?
It's a beautiful screen.
Yeah, it's much better than I expected, frankly.
Great keyboard.
I've seen somebody at work has one of these.
Amazing.
love the way this flips.
It feels good. Well, you used a Sidekick. I was a Sidekick user. Weren't you a Sidekick user for a while, Sarah?
Yeah, I was.
And it's the same guy, Ruben, the guy who designed this for Google.
I like this a lot better than the Sidekick.
It's much better. It's a grown-up Sidekick.
Yeah.
But kind of the same feel when you slide it up. The keyboard is excellent. The build is good. HTC did a really solid build on this. Android is a good operating system. It's fast. The touchscreen's good. I wish there were more apps, but that's going to happen soon, right?
And, you know, applications like, you know, that the people at iTunes won't approve will be available.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's like, this is really going to force, I think this is a serious threat to the iPhone, because I looked at it and I was like, this is not much different than my iPhone. And if I can get certain applications.
I'm dialing your wife. Whoops.
Just press, she's in Mexico. Press the red button. She'll
there
never
we go.
Know.
Sorry, Jennifer.
If the phone rings in Mexico, don't pick it up.
Just say
$8,000 later.
Phone.
It's easy. You see, I made those buttons on the front. That's with a program called AnyCut that allows you to dial or text somebody right from the front, which I really love. So already there's some interesting third-party stuff. It doesn't come with a video player. Weird. But somebody wrote one.
Yeah, that's going to be the cool thing. It's like, why can't I use Ustream on my iPhone or, you know, Quick on my iPhone? And, you know, it's
going to happen.
It's going to happen on this thing, I think. And, the iPhone, no matter what they do, they're still going to start charging $200 or $300 for that device. So this device is going to wind up being free, I'm sure. What does it cost now?
It's $179. From T-Mobile is the negative, because T-Mobile's third generation wireless data network isn't very good yet, not very widespread. So I'm using Edge here, but it works great with Wi-Fi. I'll tell you where the real downfall is, and it's the same problem with the iPhone. 3 hours battery life. I mean, it dies. You can't get it through the day.
Yeah, I mean, I can't deal with that.
It's a tough problem.
I can't.
Now, it does have a USB power adapter as opposed to the proprietary adapter on the iPhone. So I just have little USB plugs everywhere. You can even charge it from your computer. But it doesn't have great battery life. And I have to say, that just kills me.
There is something about it, too, that, you know, it feels great, but it doesn't feel like an iPhone. And I'm not trying to be like a snobby Apple
person. Are you an iPhone user?
I don't even have an iPhone.
Yeah.
I'm still rocking the BlackBerry Pearl, which is not really working out for me anymore.
Well, I think the Bold comes out tomorrow. The Storm will be out soon. Here's the iPhone.
Yeah. It's
just, compare the two and see, you know.
It's just, there's this.
There's an elegance to the iPhone.
There's the elegance. Yeah. You know, I don't want to say sexiness, because everybody says that
about
the iPhone. I don't think this phone is sexy, but it is elegant.
Yeah. I think that's probably the exactly right word. And that's Steve Jobs. He's got good taste.
He's got good taste. That vegan.
I hear he's a pescatarian.
Has anyone ever gone on a bathroom break during TWIT before?
Please do.
Thank you.
You know why? When you do, take off the microphone, please. We don't want to.
No.
Yeah, too much information.
I'll be right back.
And when we do that, by the way, I say, actually, I was the first to do it. And all we do is we say, another TWIT is in the can. Let's. Now, you were a big iPhone guy. Will, are you excited about the G1? Will it be available in the UK?
Yes, it's available here right now. I am not overly excited, because the thing that really gets me going about my iPhone is the iTunes integration.
Right. This is not a media. This is emphatically not a media player.
For one thing, it doesn't have a standard headphone jack.
I mean, that's no.
Over the last couple of years, last year, I've become used to just having my one device that is my phone and my PDA and my iPod. And so this is not going to be an iPod replacement. So it's not really interesting to me.
It does have, I like this, it comes with the application to buy on the Amazon MP3 store, customized for the phone. Works very well. I bought the Police for $5. It's very easy to use, downloads right to the phone. The phone stores it on the SD card, unprotected, easily accessed. So there's an advantage, but it just doesn't, the media player is just not as good. And mostly,
the thing for me is that the iPod, or rather the iPhone, the advantage is in the ecosystem. It's in the software on the desktop.
Well, you got to look at the Amazon store.
It's bottom integration.
Going, all right? I mean, it's pretty obvious where this is going, right? Where Android is going.
Oh, yeah. Right.
I mean, this is going to be a desktop operating system. I mean, it's so obvious. It already is. Well,
I mean, in the sense that I would say this is a great OS. Now, it's Linux, right? I mean, it's not like
it's a Linux kernel, but I mean, it's got this whole runtime on top of it. But, the real future of computing right now is not mobile and it's not desktops. It's that space in between. I don't consider the iPhone a phone as much as I consider it like a small laptop.
Right.
And these netbooks are people getting really excited about.
I agree.
Imagine the iPhone with maybe twice as big a screen, and you could still fit it in your pocket. That's what's coming.
And I completely agree.
Apple's going to make one. Everybody else is going to make one. And I bet you that, you know, if you think about people's usage, 90% of what people do is in a browser. 90%. So why do you?
Which is actually amazing when you think about it, because if you consider what we were doing with computers, you know, 10 years ago before the internet was sort of mainstream, when you load up a computer now without the internet, you're like, what do I do?
It's a doorstop.
Nobody knows what to do when they haven't got the internet connection.
It is. It's a calculator.
And it's bizarre, isn't it? Because there was a time when we didn't have the internet and we used computers.
Well, you'd open up your book of CD. Well, you'd open up your book of CD-ROMs, and then you would put in your Voyager CD for the Beatles' Hard Day's Night, and then you would look at photos of the Beatles.
Yeah, it's really.
Do you
pathetic.
Remember Encarta?
Oh yeah,
of course. So sorry. Yeah.
This is there is one application in here that may, in a way, spell something else. They put a decent phone. It's a 3-megapixel, camera, 3-megapixel camera with focus, with autofocus, and there are three now barcode applications that allow me to take it into a store, scan the barcode on anything practically, and it then looks up alternate locations and prices for that item. And I think that's very cool. Let me see if I can do that here with this book. So I've got a barcode right there. It takes a second to register it. It buzzes at you. And then now it's going to look up the book. This is Compare Everywhere. There's another one too. It's going to look up the book. Oh, it said it couldn't find it. All right. Let me, that's the first time that's happened, but it's been very good at finding stuff. That's kind of cool. Where you take a phone into a store, you get the retailer to show you some stuff, how it works, and they say, let me just take a picture of that. You scan it, and then you find out where you can get it cheaper.
And then you turn it over and you show it to the retailer, and they give you the best deal.
There you go. I like that. So yeah. Did you know that I can go down? This program, it's kind of interesting, does in fact, because it knows your location, say, here's the nearest place that's selling it. So, and
that's pretty nice.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to imagine that Google is really hot on the location specific stuff in a way that the iPhone is still not quite yet.
Well, I would say it's a parity with the iPhone on this. I mean, you know, there's a compass in this too. So the street view, it's kind of cool.
Amazing.
Yeah. Knows where you are.
It's like the Tonchi dot demonstration from TechCrunch.
Yeah.
Like it knows where you are and it's showing you what's in front of you. Somebody showed me that yesterday. It was pretty cool.
It's very cool.
There's no doubt in my mind that this will be a Windows Media Center and a desktop computer in the next year.
Interesting. So this is the Google operating system. Okay.
This is the Google operating system. Absolutely. Just on, you know, smaller footprint devices. They'll just build on this because, look, they got the browser now. They got the operating system. They got people developing for it. This is a shot across the bow of Windows and Mac. You know, we're going to compete with you. And Google is not afraid to compete with anybody anymore. Now they're like, we're going to do a browser. We're going to compete with Firefox and IE. We're going to do an operating system for phones, which also happens to run on laptops and will run on your television set. I mean, it's pretty clear what they're doing.
You know, if somebody's only used a phone before, when they start to see the kinds of functionality you can get out of something like this, I just looked up a book by scanning the barcode. I found the nearest store that sells it. I've got a phone number here I can call. I can show the map. I can also find a cheaper price online.
Where is the nearest store? Here.
Well, it says it's in Santa Rosa, which is wrong. it's looking at Barnes & Noble. So the database doesn't have our local independent bookstore, which is depressing.
That's annoying, but not really that surprising.
I think that's the other thing that's really interesting about this stuff. Is when I look at people who are carrying around a phone that is just a phone, and you think, you just want to put something in front of them and just say, have you seen all this new stuff you can do?
I don't think that's true. I think there are a lot of people who just want to make a call. Don't you?
Well, I think you only just want that when you haven't experienced what else you can have.
Sarah doesn't even want to make a call.
Honestly, I mean, my phone.
Do you text?
I text.
This is a great texting phone. It has IM, very good IM built in.
Well, and it's got the real
keyboard. It's got a real keyboard. It's a very good texting phone.
I'm to the point now where if someone leaves me a voicemail, I really just rather that they hang up and text me. Whatever I need to know.
Yeah, me too.
You know,
phone
it's just.
PhoneTag.com.
Yeah.
I use it.
What is PhoneTag.com?
What is that?
It's basically you pay $20. So if you leave them, if anybody on the Twitter audience would like to call my cell phone, they can call it now. And I will not pick up unless I know the caller ID. And if you call me, it goes directly to voicemail. The voicemail gets sent to some outsourcing place outside the country, and they transcribe it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they email you an MP3 file with the transcribed
How much does that cost?
Who knows? Let's see.
I'll check. I'm on the site right now.
I think it's $20 a month or something. Here it is. Unlimited is 30. Look at now people are starting to call me. Thanks. I shouldn't have said
How do they have your phone number?
I put my phone number out there. This is a 717 number, so I'm going to send it directly to voicemail. So
$30 for unlimited, 40 a month is 10. That's probably what I would use. I don't get more than 40 messages.
Or you just do it 35 cents a message.
Oh.
So if you were to get 20 a month, that's $7. You know,
that's not
be a one a day.
And then you get it as text, so you don't have to see. I never check my voicemail because
the groovy thing is if you give them your address book, they do the caller ID and they make the reply to the email address of the person. So if I had you in there,
nice.
I had your phone, I hit reply on the message that they send me. Boom. It's got the transcript.
And you do that with your iPhone? How do you do that?
I do it with my BlackBerry and my iPhone. I carry
probably both. Work with the G1. I'm sure it would. It's got email.
It's the same. All you're doing is forwarding your call to their number.
Right.
And then they transcribe it within like a minute. So, you know, I'll be in a meeting. I'll send somebody to voicemail. In the same meeting, I go check my BlackBerry. I see, my wife called and she wants me to pick up the dry cleaning, whatever, you know.
It's phonetag.com. Now, is this kind of company going to this kind of company has nothing to worry about with a downfall, right?
This company is...
Because it's a revenue. They've got a good revenue model.
I met the guys from this after I started using it, and they're killing it. They're making a lot of money.
So they have no problem. How about Jot? Now, Jot was free for a long time. They're now starting to charge for premium. Can you go from free to premium?
Yes, you can. I mean, actually, the person who did it most brilliantly during the down market was Scott Heiferman of Meetup.com.
Oh, yeah.
Meetup.com has been charging. They have, I know their revenue numbers, I can't say, but they're making millions of dollars a year off of their paid service, and they are profitable.
Do they offer a free and then premium? Is that how they're doing it?
No, they charge the people who are hosting the groups, I think, and anybody who joins a group is free. There goes another phone call. That's great. They're killing it. Wall Street Journal has hundreds of thousands, if not a million subscribers. They're killing it. So Twitter could immediately be profitable if they put ads like the Japanese version has in it. And they could immediately.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't tune out of Twitter just because they had ads. That wouldn't stop me.
Here's if they want to make money, all they have to do is let people subscribe to a professional version with no ads, right? So they should put a leaderboard and a medium rectangle and text ads on every page tomorrow. Then you should be able to pay for private groups, i.e. Yammer, and you should be able to pay for metrics like being able to put JavaScript on your page. So I would like to put JavaScript on my page, put my own ads, design it myself, put Google Analytics on my Twitter page. So basically, if you want to soup up your page, like you pay $50 a year or $5 a month, and if you want to,
I like
do corp.
It.
I mean, they would have 1,000.
So I imagine that they're going to do something like that. We talked last week about Ev replacing Alex. Do you have any
Jack?
I'm sorry. Do you have any insight into what happened there?
I know both of the guys over there. I know the investors over there. I think
was that a firing?
No. I think the company's done fantastic, and there's a time for a tech-based CEO and a first stage CEO, and there's a time for a second stage CEO. So my guess is, you know, Jack's done such a great job of getting the company to where it is today that the next phase of it's going to be like the business phase of it. Maybe they wanted somebody who was a little more business focused than tech focused, but you know, nobody gives them credit for the fact that they've fixed the scaling problem.
They sure have. It works well now. In fact, it survived all the debates very well. Yeah.
It's a great product. So, I mean, there's a lot of haters out there. It's like, eBay had tons of problem of uptime. You know, all the great sites have uptime problems during their peak, or almost all of them. I think they're going to do just fine.
There's a guy in our StickM chat who's claimed to be Kevin Rose. I have a.
It is.
It is?
Yeah, he Twittered it.
Well, Kevin, why don't you call us?
I know Kevin.
Rockstar. Talk to his agent.
Yeah. Oh, no. He has to have somebody protect him against the crowd.
Yo, it was crazy.
Let me call him. Let me get him in here.
You know what's funny, too, is that Kevin is...
Oh, he's not on Skype. Kevin got on Skype.
He's on IM.
Yeah, but he's not on Skype. He hasn't launched his Skype. As soon as he launches his Skype, I'll call.
Oh, man, people are putting Kevin's IM in the chat room. Don't do that, people.
There he is.
Well, he can turn off. I don't care if people know my I am either, because you just turn off everybody that's not on your page.
Yeah, that's what I do, yeah. I mean, so it's you can guess my I am. Kevin Woes. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, hello.
He's always got to steal my thunder.
He couldn't let well
he
enough alone.
Just sit back and
you're
watch
the one
that
was,
had to be
first of all. No.
It's true.
Sarah, I am me, and she's like, you should get in here, blah,
oh,
blah, blah.
Lies.
it was her idea.
Just because you created Dig.com.
So, Kevin, they were talking about, these other guys, I wasn't saying anything because I'm just insanely jealous. We're talking about, A, your ink cover, pretty cool.
Oh, thank you. It's
respect.
Pretty cool honor to get that.
And then the incredible Eric Clapton is godlike treatment they gave you at FOA.
FOA was nuts. FOA was a lot of fun, though.
Is the fan stuff increasing?
I was listening to you guys a few minutes ago, and I think you're absolutely right that internationally, you know, there's a lot more fans out there. It seems, you know, we do stuff in the States, and you'll have 400 or 500 people come out, but you do it over in London, and it's a couple thousand plus.
That's really interesting. Why do you have an insight into that?
Yeah, because if you're in the States and sort of Dig Nation is maybe going around a bunch of different states,
no
you can
deal.
Wait for it to come to your home state.
Right.
In England, it's going to be London or nothing, so people travel from all over England to come down. Also because it's a much smaller and denser place than a lot of places in the US.
But you don't think that people are more rabid?
Well, it's also pent up. You got the whole year, like it's the one time that Kevin comes over, so you know, you get the whole 12 months in a 2-day thing.
You know what?
You should have seen it. There were kids, like, you know, 10-year-old kids, 12-year-old kids, 14-year-old kids, like Dig, you know, on their forehead, Dig shirts, Dig tattoos.
Kevin, you need colors so that people can paint themselves the Dig colors.
Kevin, has anyone ever met you and cried?
I've had that happen to me.
Have you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Many times.
First of all, Sarah, that happens to you all the time.
Please.
No, you've had it happen, I'm sure.
They cry.
Where somebody comes up to you and they can't.
They cry because
they
I'm a lot
shaky.
Shorter than they thought they I was.
You're my biggest fan.
Yeah.
No, that's the one thing I get.
You
so much smaller than you look on TV.
Well, TV makes you big. You look big here because of the perspective. You look like you're bigger than me.
Well,
I think the internet celebrity thing is starting to, I think there's a couple of people like Kevin, Perez Hilton, who are like starting to cross over.
Was the interesting thing this week. Britney Spears showed up on Twitter and everybody said, okay, Twitter is now, that's the Britney moment, the transition. And she's got like 5,000 followers, nowhere near. And she'll never catch Kevin.
She could.
No, I don't think so.
But
I think
the thing is that people know it's really Kevin. It's clearly not really Britney.
No, it's Britney.
I think
it's
somebody
Britney, but it's
who
her
works
PR
for
agency.
Well, you know, it's Britney and her PR agency. Then they'll sign it. I think they've actually done something very intelligent. When it's her, she says it's her. When it's her PR person, it's the real Britney.
All right.
But
something
I think
tells me she doesn't even know the password.
I feel like
I
talk about Britney a lot more than I want to.
No, I think it's really her. She says, like, I'm taking the kids to the pumpkin patch now.
See, but it would be so easy for someone to do that. I don't think Britney's on Twitter.
She's not doing it herself. No
I don't
way.
Think so either.
I think she
but
is.
But she will. She will. Just like, I mean, the same thing happened with MySpace, but they actually, for better or worse, published their MySpace blogs without clearing it with their PR people. Like, Lindsay Lohan does that all the time and gets herself in trouble.
Is that how you found out about her thing? That she's like dating that?
No, it's low TMZ.
No, that's Perez.
That's like really big news. Well, it's kind of old news, actually.
I don't really care.
But
so I know Kevin's broken up about it. So I just think that Kevin's going to always be bigger than Britney on Twitter.
I don't know. You know, it's 50,000 fans is a lot, or 30 or 40 or 50. Like, but when you start talking Britney Spears level, like, she might have a couple of 100,000 people in her
maybe
fan club who don't even know about this yet. She might have, some of these celebrities have hundreds of thousands of emails on their list, or they have, I don't know, what, 500,000, a million friends on MySpace. So
yeah,
that's going to be the test of Twitter, is if you get 100,000 people following Britney Spears, if they can survive. Obama, by the way, crossed the 100,000 mark a couple of weeks ago. Kevin, what you up to these days?
Today, not much. Just hanging out, relaxing. It's Sunday.
Wait a minute. I got to go get your tea.
You went tea tasting at Samovar, didn't you?
I did, a little bit earlier, yeah.
What kind of tea did you have?
Today, Girokoru, which is a Japanese kind of a really fine green tea. We don't need to talk about this on here. We can talk about this afterwards.
Well, Leo left. I mean, I'm trying to hold down the show the best I can. Kevin, tell us more about, you know, your new car.
I don't have a new car.
Oh. You were going to get one, though, weren't you?
Look, this is cool. This is Kevin Rose tea from Adagio.
Hey, I have some tea, too.
Is there a Sarah Lane? They didn't send me that. So is this last year's tea, the white ginger, or is that this year's tea?
Look at that picture. Good Lord.
Yeah, that's an old picture. I have no idea. Prager does all these tea deals.
See, this is the thing. I'm not going to ever drink David Prager tea.
Green curtain?
It is the most god-awful tea. Just smell this. It is the most god-awful.
Let's smell. We've got this at work, but I stay far away.
Your tea.
Oh, gosh.
Your tea is actually quite good.
There's a Prager in there.
It's got a little bit Prager, essence of
what
Prager.
What do I smell?
It smells like pipe tobacco.
No, it smells worse.
But your tea smells quite good, Kevin. It smells like you.
Well, it's the ginger.
It's the ginger. It gives it a nice, fresh, astringent smell.
My tea has rooibos in it. Are you
oh, you have a
with
tea.
Rooibos?
I have red. Yes, that red tea. Yeah.
I'm a big fan. It's caffeine free though, so
no,
it's something
good.
That you can drink later on in the day.
I'm not going to get a tea.
Yeah, it's
I actually cool. had. I'm going to point out. I had afternoon tea this afternoon.
You actually are a tea drinker.
Do you I'm a tea drinker. And I said, you know what? I sat down. And Alex cooked scones, and we had tea out of this exquisite Wedgwood teapot we got for our wedding, and it was a perfect of a perfect English Sunday afternoon.
Cooked
and I felt
scones,
like an outrageous cliche.
Isn't that great? Yeah. I'm a more of a crumpet kind of guy than a scone.
I don't even know what a crumpet is.
Oh, I do
is.
Like a good bit of crumpet.
What's a crumpet? I want to know.
Stop it, Will. A crumpet is a lovely little baked good. I also like Devon cream and cucumber sandwiches. Can we have that when I come to tea?
You can. I had Devon cream and cucumber sandwiches this afternoon, so you're very welcome.
Oh, man. Now, is that 11s's or no? That's
That was an afternoon tea. That was like a 4 o'clock tea. My parents came down, so we had a little thing going on.
Isn't that cute?
But what would have been better if I could have had some Kevin Rose tea? Then I could have served my parents up some Kevin Rose.
Okay,
they would have loved that.
Kevin.
But stay away.
You know which one I drink? I drink the matcha green tea.
Matcha
is like
delicious.
I like matcha.
The ground up leaves, and I have like the little whisk at my office, so my assistant knows how to make it, and I put honey in it, and it's
You can't have your assistant making your tea for you.
Sure.
No. The matcha tea is used in the Japanese tea ceremony. It's something you're supposed to do yourself.
Yeah, but oh, really?
Yeah, totally.
No, Jason,
I do it myself sometimes.
A special assistant just for making the tea.
My matcha green tea assistant. You don't have one, Kevin?
I don't.
Oh, you have to have a matcha green tea because I have a regular tea assistant. But
I had one, but with the downturn and everything, the economy, I had to lay them off.
How's the fighter jet, though? Is that still, you still have that, right?
No comment.
No, he had to sell his fighter jet.
He's getting a Tesla.
So sad. Let's see. I think we're done. Are we done? Anything else? It was so good. Kevin, I'm so glad you called in. That's wonderful.
Yeah, Sarah was just texting me nonstop. And
I said, wherever I am, Kevin's sure to follow.
He's jelly.
Poking his nose around.
He's a little jealous.
Maybe you want me on the show, too.
So, Sarah, your fabulous parting gift, a delicious...
You giving me that green curtain?
David Prager, the man behind the green curtain tea.
Oh, Praggy. Because I don't see enough of him during the week.
It's so disgusting. It smells like socks. I don't know what it is.
You know what? Let me smell it again.
I'm telling you, pipe tobacco.
I mean, it smells like chemicals.
No, you can't give it away.
It smells like a cleaning product.
It's the most disgusting tea.
Kevin Rose tea sold out. Prager tea, not so much.
That's a bad sign.
I don't know what that is.
Does Alex have a tea too, Kevin?
Yes.
Beer
so
flavored.
So does Glenn.
It's like a beer flavored tea.
All the Pop Siren Girls have teas.
Very hoppy. Yeah.
Very hoppy.
Very hoppy. I don't know if there's even any other stories. I just want to wrap it up.
Can I just say the other one story I wanted to say was Rackspace buys Jungle Disc.
Of course, and I'm pissed off about this because I love Jungle
Why?
Disc.
Why
well, because so? Jungle Disc ties to S3. This is Rackspace trying to create their own storage in the cloud solution like S3.
They announced their
is
own.
Is that a bad thing?
Yeah, it's a bad thing because I use Jungle Disk to go to S3. You think they're going to leave Jungle Disk as an S3 client?
Oh, okay. So now Rackspace is going to basically kill off Jungle Disk, or at least
I would
switch.
If I were
it's going to be just as cheap as S3. Their cloud thing. Their cloud
but the point is, I'm happy with S3. I use S3. I use Jungle Disk to access S3, and Jungle Disk. I mean, maybe they'll keep it up.
You know what the problem is with this stuff is like we started building some applications like pieces of Mahalo
on EC2 and
Well, we use Hadoop for our storage now, and that works fine. But EC2 is just not fast enough. Like, if you want to have quarter second page load times, you can't really do it with EC2 yet. So storage is fine. Running different instances is fine. But
how about Google Apps? Is that better?
No, Google Apps is worse. We have a couple of Google Apps, and we were blowing out the. They have a bunch of limiters on it, and so it's just not ready for prime time. Nobody's really built. The real opportunity is somebody's got to take a CDN, a content delivery network, like Edgecast, which we use, or any of these.
Cachefly,
which is really good. Somebody has to take that and build it into EC2. So when you're writing your HTML files, you're writing the Dig homepage, it can actually, like Dig could be run or Mahalo could be run on EC2, but it can't be served.
I heard that Rackspace was doing that with Lime. What's the? You know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I always want to say LimeWire, but it's not. It's They're a good CDN, actually. IT Conversations uses them. They're actually a very good CDN.
Yeah.
Apparently, according to our chat room, Jungle Dave has said they are not going to kill the S3 implementation of Jungle Disk, which I'm very happy about. But I'm not crazy about the idea of... it just feels like, to me, Rackspace moving in on this... I guess competition's good.
No, it's a good thing. I mean, the idea of spending $2,000 or $3,000 a month renting servers is crazy now.
But wait a minute. I have three dedicated servers at SoftLayer. You think that I could replace for the twit.tv, the leoville.com, the leo.am, for all those sites, do you think I could replace those with this kind of in the cloud solution?
I think you probably will. Yeah. And what's coming.
Why is that better?
Because you never have to maintain the hardware, and the hardware will scale.
And it's distributed.
So you'll go down when the EC2 people go down, which is fine because it's not going to. They just announced they have an SLA, a service layer agreement.
Good.
Which is a good step. But
because EC2 has gone down several times.
There's actually a couple of businesses going around pitching themselves now for an idea I had like a year ago, which is somebody should make a load balancer that goes across clouds, and there has to be a cloud standard. So if you were to build, let's say, Dig or Mahalo or Twitter or Pounce on one of these systems, what you should have is a load balancer that when people come if EC2 fails, it just rolls over to Google App Engine. And if those two fail, it goes over to Rackspace.
And so if
that could happen at the load balancer level, then you would have Sky Computing, which would be multiple clouds and just point your users to whichever cloud happens.
Well, you got to believe Microsoft wants to get in this space too.
Microsoft's got a big announcement next week about this.
Yeah, PDC is coming up, starts tomorrow.
Is this where Skynet comes from?
Skynet.
It's Skynet. It really changes. When we did TechCrunch 50 this year, we asked people how much was invested in their companies, and a lot of them, like Meetrix, was built on Google App Engine, or a bunch of these were built on EC2, and we asked them what their costs are, and they're like, well, we don't have any server costs. We have no office space. The only cost, the marginal cost of a startup today is the person's time. That's it. Which means you're going to see a lot of interesting things in the down market when people have a lot of time on their hands.
Uncharted territory now, making up history as we went along.
Yeah. Skynet's coming, baby. You guys didn't get
this machine was the only one who measured up.
You guys didn't get it, did you?
The geeks got it.
So, Kevin, what are you doing now with Dig? You still own all your own servers and all that, or?
Yeah, I mean, Dig's in it's a little bit different. Jason, you know how this is. It's kind of hard to do stuff on EC2 and S3 when you're doing 30 million uniques a month.
You can't do it.
Yeah, you can't do it. So we got our own stuff.
Well, the publishing model is just not—it's not there yet. Because when you have a site that's this active, you have to write the files, as opposed to people making database calls, or else your server would crash. So I'm assuming a lot of caching. Yeah, you have to basically go from the system actually writes pages that can then be cached by Squid Cache or by your Cisco router, whatever you use to do your caching, or your Edgecast, whoever. You can't really have database calls going out, so you have to write the files, and that just means you preclude you from doing something like EC2 today, but I think that's where they're going to go with it. So you could store all the images or all the data on EC2 from Dig or Mahalo or Engadget or whatever, but you just can't serve it out of there.
Yeah, that makes sense. You just are too demanding. And of course, you got Jay, who has a lot of experience with this as a founder of Equinix, so he knows.
Yeah,
how many servers is Dig on? Like 200, I would guess?
Oh, I don't think we ever talk about numbers, but yeah, it's a little bit more than that.
Yeah, makes sense. And are you in one NOC or you're in multiple NOCs now?
We have a East Coast, West Coast.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, you basically have to, and it's you quick. Serve people dynamically out of each one.
Yeah, I mean, it's quicker to serve London from the East Coast and Japan from over here. So
just get excited when we talk about Big Iron like this. It's just hot.
Yeah. All that data moving around.
I got like as a little server
who's
in Dallas.
Who's your CDN?
We don't use one.
They don't use one.
They're their own CDN.
Ooh.
No, but actually the pages on Dig are very light. They have very few requests.
It's mostly all text, you know, and we can compress the hell out of it.
All those images on the front page, are those served from one sprite or from multiple images?
That's a good question. I don't even know what they, we use, what's that distributed file system, MogulFS?
Yeah.
But I'm not sure where it's being served out of.
Yeah. That's the sort of next level when you have all those dynamic images making one dynamic, you know, sprite out of them.
Yeah.
So you don't have to serve up 20 requests, but it looks like 66 requests, but the response time for Dig was 0.1 second. That's the first request, which is extraordinary.
So Kevin, at the beginning of the show, Jason told a story about having a meal with you in Santa Monica and offering you $2 million.
Sushi lunch. Yes.
Offering you $2 million for Dig. Do you remember that?
Yeah, absolutely. That was back even before the redesign.
What did you order?
No, more to the point, was that a tough thing to say no to, or was it a very easy thing for you to say no to?
Well, the thing was that there was, Jason, you had some kind of aggressive terms baked into the whole deal. It wasn't just like straight up $2 million cash.
Yeah, I wanted the option to buy the whole thing.
In pieces. You wanted the
I remember this. You actually talked about this. I do remember this.
Well, it was, I don't know how many people were using it, but Engadget was much bigger at the time than Dig. So, and you were showing me the version 2.0 at that time, which was much more beautiful.
Yeah, that's right. That was when I brought Daniel on and had him redesign the site. But
I don't know if you talked about it on Twit, Kevin, but I do remember talking with you, I think maybe offline about this. And that was exactly why you turned it down, as you wanted to retain control.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very early days. Yeah. If he'd have brought a check and written down $2 million and put it in front of my face, and I had just started the project, you know, 4 or 5 months earlier, I probably would have said yes.
Well, that's what I was wondering. I thought, boy, that's got to be tough to say no to that when you know this is something brand new, and who knows what was gonna how it was gonna go. I mean, if you had
I knew it was gonna be big. I could tell it was gonna be bigger than the blogs it serves because we started to see that it was sending like 1,000 people to Engadget at a time, and I was like, oh, wait a second, this thing is going to be bigger than all the blogs because it's a layer on top of all of them. So I knew,
Jason,
it was really big.
This is why I think you'd make a great VC, because you found us very early on. This is like we had almost very little traffic.
Yeah.
And you found us and made me an offer like over a sushi lunch. It's like, why do you ever consider like going the VC route?
You know, I like to build stuff, so
But you know, also he knew because he had inside information. He knew what traffic you were sending to Engadget.
I had the referral file, so yeah.
Not everybody would know that. That's
but I know. I mean, I wouldn't give myself too much credit for that one, but being a VC is actually kind of boring.
Boring.
I'm on the board of some companies. I mean, it can make you crazy because you can't tell another entrepreneur what to do, and you're really limited in your role. I'd much rather just build myself. I love the fact that now I can just build whatever I want and get a large amount of funding for it and take 5 years. It's like, you know, you get to a certain point in your career, you can actually build for a couple of years without worrying about it. It's like,
How are you doing with the economic downturn, Kevin? Are you guys comfortable with your position? You got enough cash?
Dig just closed a round of funding for $28 million here about 3 weeks ago. So we're in good position.
You have plenty of runway, as Kevin would say.
Plenty.
I mean, Jason would say.
Well, also you guys have a guaranteed deal with Microsoft for your ad inventory, which was a brilliant move to sign that when you did.
Turns out,
Yeah, we signed a 3-year deal with Microsoft, so they handle all of our ad sales for us. So really, for us, it's just like putting our heads down and just, you know, building for the next few years.
Does that have a guarantee on it? I mean, do they guarantee you a certain amount of money?
We can't talk about the terms for it, unfortunately. Okay.
But I can tell you what the other deals were, like Microsoft did. They did guarantee a CPM when they did a bunch of those deals. I don't know the dig deal, but when they did those deals, they guaranteed like typically $5, $4, $6 to make sure that that's how they got it over Google. So they went and overpaid, you know, at least in the MySpace case, I think they overpaid.
Right.
Google overpaid.
With Facebook as well.
Facebook, they overpaid. And so
it's nice to have a big daddy with deep pockets who wants
essentially to. They're doing it for the data. So basically they get all the data from the Facebook and dig users, not on an individual.
It's more than just the ads. In other words, it's a valuable proposition.
That's their play is they're trying to create profiles so they can serve ads across networks to groups of people. So that's the big, the big land grab today is the data for the profile information, which is why Facebook's very valuable.
It's getting on to 2 a.m. in the UK. We're going to let Will Harris go to bed now. I think he already did.
He's like,
No. It's only coming up to midnight because the clocks went back.
Oh, your clocks have already gone back.
So I got a bonus hour in bed this morning.
Well, thank Alex for letting us steal you for the evening.
Yeah, not at all.
Channelflip.com. Go there and see Will's crazy interview with me in a smoking jacket.
I watched that just yesterday.
There's some good ones on there. There's also Molly in her pajamas.
The Molly is up? Oh.
Molly was a YouTube sensation. She did over 100,000 views in the space of a day.
Wow.
And it's all because of the tongue and tattoo, right?
Hey, well, so can I ask Kevin a question? Are you seeing a lot more? I know you guys have open positions and we have some open developer positions. Are you seeing a lot more activity from resumes coming in?
Absolutely.
Oh, boy.
I'm seeing 10 times the amount of resumes.
Oh, boy.
People are qualified. And I'm like, wow.
It's insane. Number of people coming from Yahoo, all over the place.
Oh, it makes me want to cry.
What are you thinking of hiring Molly Wood?
I would. If I had the money, I'd hire Molly, I'd hire Sarah, but I can't afford you guys. I can only hire Dane.
I work for like below minimum wage.
Okay, you're hired.
Yay.
Kevin, I'm stealing her. thank you so much, Will. Have a great night. Channelflip.com to see the Molly Wood interview. And you've got more, I know, to come. Is the Arena Slutsky going up soon?
That'll be fairly soon, yeah.
I hear she was a pistol.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it, yeah. She's a legend.
Thank you, Will. It's great to talk to you.
Take it easy, guys.
Jason, always a pleasure to have you on, too. You're the greatest. I'm glad to hear that while you're saying this is the worst depression we've ever experienced in our little lifetimes, we'll survive it.
I have a great investment tip for everybody in the audience, which is going to pay huge returns if they listen to me carefully. Invest in yourself. That's the best thing to do in a down market. Invest in yourself and your own projects. Because they will pay the biggest dividends.
And I can eat dog food for a while. It's okay.
If you're a PHP programmer and you're like a level 7 out of 10, invest in being an 8. If you're, you know, a video editor and you're level 8, invest in being number 9. You know, like invest in yourself in the down market. Invest in your projects, you know, and you'll be fine on the other side.
Excellent. Great advice. Thank you, Jason. Mahalo.com. MAHALO.com. Sarah Lane is at Revision 3. You can see her on Pop Siren.
That's right.
Anything else in development?
For me?
Yeah, anything you want to talk about?
Ooh, there's always things in development. But nah, I mean, for now, I spend most of my waking hours on Twitter or Tumblr or my own blog. I'm actually trying to blog more lately.
Mention of what the show we're hosting tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Kevin. And I are going to host the Dig Reel this week.
Oh, good.
So that'll go live on Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern.
That'll be fun to see.
On Revision 3.
Is that the first time you've done that together?
The Dig Reel, yeah. It's the first time Kevin's been on the Dig Reel, period.
Wow, that's great.
It's pretty fun. I'm hoping, you know, to get some fur flying. Kevin, what do you say?
The last time we hosted a show together was probably back G4 Tech TV days, right?
It was. Wow. Yeah, it was like Attack of the Show back in the day.
Years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. Well,
we were just a baby back then.
It was. Kevin was like, remember how like pudgy he used to be in the cheeks?
I know. He looks so skinny in that ink thing. Well, are you eating okay?
You know what he is?
Are you on the Steve Jobs diet?
He's manorexic.
He's manorexic.
I am not. Yes. Just because I decide to drink a little less and work out at the gym, all of a sudden I'm manorexic.
You guys have no idea. He's got kids. Got cannons. I mean, you're diesel compared to how you used to be. I mean, you look like you're hitting the weights.
I just do a lot of climbing, honestly. I'm not in it to be like...
Oh, your shoulders look like you're Michael Phelps or something.
Glycemic load.
No, yeah, it does look good. I don't know about
it's
the haircut.
Not zoom in, Leo. I'm watching the video.
Oh, look at the haircut. What is that haircut?
Should I think it's nice. It's very military. It's a nice, good, old-fashioned haircut.
He's going to war with the Twitter.
That's right.
But look at those guns. They're good. Look at that.
Photoshop.
Cannons.
Whoa, cannons.
Oh,
jeez. He's got the cannon.
Why did I come on this show?
I don't know why we always rib you. It's like you're the kid brother. That's why. You're the kid brother.
It is like that. I really feel like that.
I feel like Kevin's years younger than me, but he's only like 4 months younger. Can you believe Kevin's almost 32 years old?
That's nothing. You should see the Tiger Beat cover. Guys, haven't seen the Tiger Beat cover?
No.
When the Dream Day, Kevin Rose?
No, you're not joking?
No, he's on Tiger Beat. You didn't see it?
No. The one that says, I'm gay?
That would be so... You know you've made it if you make Tiger Beat.
Oh, absolutely. It's Zac Efron
really
or Kevin Rose.
Still?
Who's your dream prom date?
Oh, he's so hot. SarahLane.com is the blog. Kevin Rose is at Dig.com. And he and Sarah are going to be on the Dig Reel this Wednesday.
The Dig Reel.
Kevin, thank you for calling in. It's always great to hear from you.
Thanks for having
you
me.
You called
on.
In after the halfway mark, so I don't have to actually pay you for this show. I just wanted to let you know.
Well, it's all good.
No, I'm just kidding.
I still haven't been getting my direct deposit, Leo, from
the
show.
Oh, I'm sorry. We'll work on that.
Hey, great.
We do means testing now on the checks. I should warn you. You'll have to send me your 1040. Yeah. Mm. Thank you, everybody. Another twit is...
This is amazing.
In the can. What's happening is there's underneath you when you talk, there's a... Let me call you one more time.
Okay.
Let me call you one more time. Oh, Jason.
He's
Jason.
A womanizer. Did you see that womanizer video?
Britney Spears? Ooh, I don't know.
Is it hot? I haven't
you
seen it.
Cover anybody with oil, put her in a steam room, and have her lie on a bench. She's going to look good.
Blue screens, like, forget it.
I'm killing you.
Round the horn.